I just did want to speak briefly here about, sort of continue what Richard's been talking about. We all know Richard has his PhD in clinical psychology and has been doing this for a long time. And some of us don't have a degree in psychology or a master's degree, and we aren't therapists, and maybe we don't even teach yoga. And there can be some, ooh, can I do this thing come up. Is that present for anyone?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
All right. So I know the feeling. I remember being at the level one training going, there's no way I can ever do this. There's no way I can ever do this. And I just want to speak to that because it's important. Part of why I'm doing this dyad demo too is so that you can hear a different voice and a different way of meeting in a dyad. And I was in the office a couple months ago and someone called and said they wanted to meet one-on-one and do iRest. And I said, oh, I'd be willing to meet with you, absolutely. And they said, and he said, you sound really young. I don't know. Is there any man there that I can work with? And I said, he's busy. But is there another man? You said, yeah, there's actually two more men, and they're busy too, and they don't do iRest, per se. And I said, you're welcome to. I can refer you to a man. I got a great person I know that can work with you. And he said, well, I don't know if you can handle what I'm going to bring in. And he said, have you ever had someone very close to you die? And I said, no, I haven't. And he said, well, I don't know if you can really meet me. And I said, I don't know either. So why don't you come in and we'll see how it goes. And I said, you know I can meet myself and all the different things that have arisen for me. So I feel confident that I can meet you, but let's just give it a try. And he came in, and there was a deep meeting, and when he's been an ongoing client. And I think that was partly because I was willing to just really not know. And to really explore, can I meet this? I don't know. Maybe I'll want to run out of the room. And what I have discovered is that I'm just meeting myself. And I've heard Richard and others say this, you're just meeting yourself. It's true. You're meeting your own reactivity. You're meeting this piece in yourself. So when the other person is in deep grief or is in anger, you're meeting that anger here. Because if you're not, then you're going to act to push them away or to shut it down or to make them feel better so they don't feel grief. So it's just a really important piece to keep in mind. And I think it brings it down to the level of, I'm just meeting myself. And so when I'm sitting with another and they're experiencing fear, I'm meeting fear here, and the degree to which I'm comfortable with it, or I can sort of bracket it and set it aside, is the degree to which I can really meet them in their fear. And I don't really know how to meet them. This is what I really know. I really don't know how to meet them. And not as a belief to take on. I don't know how to do this, you know, to where I'm sort of undervaluing myself. But rather as a, am I comfortable not knowing? And I had, just to give one more example, I met with a woman who had hitmen out on her. She was a whistleblower for Lehman Brothers. And she couldn't sleep at all. They were around her house. She could hear them outside her house. And for years, she'd just been unable to sleep and traumatized, and she loved her space. And we spent a lot of time working with the inner resource. And we went and touched the fear for maybe 20 seconds. She started to feel into this deep fear that she had related to old traumas as well. And if I would have been trying something on of thinking, this is how I should do this, let's go into the fear, let's go into the fear, I would have missed what happened, which was she just needed to touch the fear and come back to the inner resource. This is this resiliency piece. And we spent the whole rest of the time, she kicked off her shoes and laid on the couch, and the whole rest of the time in the inner resource. And she came back the next week and said, I slept through the night. I am now connected with home, with a sense of home. And I know I can meet the fear. Now, if we had met longer than that, we would have gone into the fear more. But I didn't know what to do in that moment. But that's where the moment took us. So just as an example of, you know, we get a tool and then we think, oh, that's the way to do it. And welcoming is very broad. You can do it in many, many different ways. So, does anyone have any questions that come up as I speak? So that's a little bit about my experience and how I've unfolded into this. And I made lots of mistakes where I suggest something and the person says, no, that's not at all where I'm at. I'm here. And then that I get to see where they are. Because I didn't really know. So I was willing to say, oh, so is this what you're saying? Or is this, you know, maybe I'll make a suggestion to go into an opposite or something. And it just doesn't land right. And so I just want to speak to one more element of it, which is this deep forgiveness of ourselves. I want to use the word forgiveness, kind of has connotations, but this deep welcoming of ourselves. Just as we are meeting another person, it's that simple. It's so simple. And bringing that compassion to yourself as a practitioner, you're bringing it to them. You're just holding a container, holding the space. So, yes? Can we get a mic? I like this.
Could you say a little bit more about your use of the word forgiveness? Because you said it has connotations, yeah. But then...
Yeah. We get to meet all of our self-judgments when we're sitting with another. And we can get trapped in them. Or we can really forgive. I think there's a poem Rumi says, if you can just ultimately just realize it's all about just forgiving yourself. You know, that sets us free. It's almost like we're judging ourselves, we're dealing with stuff, we don't know what we're doing. And can we really meet ourselves there and in a sense forgive ourselves so that we're totally free to be just who we are. So it's a way, it's like we're setting ourselves totally free. And that's pretty radical. I mean, really, it's very radical.
This is a question that's the practicalities of doing this. Mm-hmm. Has anybody had an instance where someone comes in and says, I'm doing this horrible thing that is illegal? But we do have a patient client, but it's kind of unspoken. But, you know, it's not like the doctor or a priest,
right.
You know, like a pediatrician has to report child abuse. Mm-hmm. or I guess in Illinois they do. I don't know if it's around the country. What do we do? A guy says, I'm abusing my stepdaughter. You know, right. Do we turn around and call the police?
So I think this is a really, really good question. And Richard can elaborate after I answer it because the experience there. My sense is use your own judgment. So I had someone who was saying they wanted to bash in someone else's kitchen. They were planning on taking an axe and going to bash in the kitchen. And I knew, I trusted, had a sense that this wasn't a personal, this wasn't a violence that this person was going to do to another human being. And I also had a sense that he wasn't really going to do it.
Yeah.
I didn't know. But that was one that brought, that was a scenario that brought that up. And I just trusted my own judgment. I trusted my own judgment with it. And I stayed with him with it. And I checked in. And, he didn't do it. He could have done it. And I think that when we get to the point where we know that someone is going to harm or is harming another human being or themselves, that's where we make an intervention by asking, Do you have a psychiatrist that you see? Can I have their number? I'd really like to call them. Or if they're talking about suicide, we ask, would you like to make an agreement with me that if that comes up for you, suicide comes up for you, that you won't do it until you come in again? Maybe asking for an agreement, but they may not agree. I've had someone not agree. And so it's... My sense first is use your own personal judgment, but then Richard can speak to what the line is there.
As far as I understand, and you raise a really good question, and what I'll do is I'll do some personal investigation into this, into the legal ramifications of it. We, as an unlicensed professional, you have no duty to warn. You are not bound by any law, any provision, any ethics board, any regulatory system for a duty to warn. If somebody says, I'm going to commit suicide, you have no duty to call the police. We may have a moral, internal, as Kelly's saying, responsibility. And this is where I think it can be helpful if you're seeing a person to have some kind of an agreement that you hand out to them. But I think this is a good question for legal advice, and I'll do some inquiry on this one because we are going to potentially find ourselves in these situations. I have on numerous occasions over my lifetime, and I've had to report some people, and I've had to call the police, and I've had to call 911. So, but I'm bound by a professional license. So let me look into this. I think it's also an issue around liability insurance that I think everybody should carry. But we're getting liability insurance as a meditation teacher, as a yoga teacher, or in some other manner, form. And we carry, by the way, a $3 million policy on all of you, just for if something like this happened. So if you're teaching, I rest under our auspices and linked to our office, not on your own. That's why we carry a $3 million policy, because there are potential liabilities here. But I'll do some homework. It's a good question.
I'm also a certified life and executive coach, which is another unlicensed profession currently. There's movements in some jurisdictions to change that, but I would recommend, if this is up for you, to check out the Coaches Code of Ethics, which is on the International Coaches Federation website, ICF, International Coaches Federation, which is our professional association. And in my training, we did a lot of ethics work, and it was very interesting because what Kelly pointed to and what Richard pointed to both came up in our ethics training, which is that when this comes up, it's an opportunity for investigation. It's an opportunity for your investigation, for your client. Why is this arising here? What is there that wants to emerge? Feeling into that space. And then we have to operate in the physical plane in society with those rules and structures. And what are the boundaries of our confidentiality? And finding your own balance point between those two things. And you can be very liberal and say, I'm not obligated to report this, and I'm not going to, and I would encourage you to seek counsel, get help. I'm willing to support you in that. Or you could be at the other end of, in a more conservative place, and not even declaring that you will actually report, follow up. And it's for each of us to decide in our own practice.
One thing that does occur to me, how many of us have ever had a thought of hurting ourselves or another? And how often have we acted on it? Most people will never act on it. Our ability, as Paul is suggesting, to help them inquire into it so that we're not afraid. If we're not afraid of the inquiry, then we can help them not to be afraid of their impulse and to learn how to have that impulse control and to take the action that they need to contain it. So I think there's a very big piece here, again, what Kelly was talking about. We're always only meeting ourselves and our ability to meet our fear in that moment when somebody is saying that they want to bash in a kitchen or slit the tires or hurt their ex-wife or whatever. We want to really help them and turn into it. It's, in my estimation, it's very rare that they're actually going to act, but they want to be able to inquire into it. But there is that rare instance where they leave our office and we're convinced that they are. Now we have to really dig deep to see what is our moral obligation as a human being with another human being. Would you pass by two people beating up on each other on the street, or would you take some action? Or so I think these are deep inquiries.
There's a couple more questions here.
Perhaps on a related issue, I found myself, especially since level one, in spontaneous dyads with family members, some with deep issues, touching on again. I don't have an education in psychology and whatnot, but there's been a movement towards me. Mm-hmm. And I've had some confusion about my role, perhaps as a brother-in-law, a brother or a son, in meeting this. It's kind of messy. Would you have anything to offer?
So you're meeting the messiness. And this is where I think we get to play of where our edges are and where we kind of go past taking care of ourselves or what the capacity is there or some interpersonal thing. So to me, it's just meeting the messiness that's coming up for you and finding your own spontaneous response. Letting the roles fall aside as brother, brother-in-law, whatever it is, therapist, yoga teacher, IRS person, and just meeting. You're just really just meeting them. And then the natural response will come if you need to back out, refer, whatever it is. Does that help?
So again, this is meeting myself.
The messiness mm-hmm. that's coming up for you, but it's the complex situation, I know. And,
I think what you just said about the dropping your role. Mm-hmm. We have to give up being a son, being whatever. It's one human being meeting another. So in that moment, you're just a human being meeting another human being. And I think if anything, the straining is about is how to be a good human being and meet ourselves and then our humanness in others. And then, again, what you just said, which is respect the boundary. Mm-hmm. There come a natural point where we realize something doesn't feel right here. I'm starting to transgress a boundary that doesn't feel good. And so then it's like we need to refer. So, again, that sensitivity that the practice has built into us to be able to meet ourselves and respect that boundary that is saying, you know what, stop. Don't go further. Or keep going, and I don't care whether this is my friend, my mother. I've got some funny stories, but I'll save them for later.
Richard, how long is the dyad pieces?
Mm-hmm. So you've got about 50 minutes right now.
Does it usually take 40 minutes for that? Or?
Yeah.
Okay, so we have about 10 more minutes. Tina?
We haven't talked about this now, at least I haven't heard it in the two trainings. I'm actively involved in an abuse case. I'm in court. And I'm stuck. So I'm trying to get beyond that. But the thing that has saved me is documenting. And you haven't mentioned that yet. So we've talked about people taking their lives or wanting to hurt others. The thing that has saved me over and over again, it's the documentation of the situation. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes it spans a long time. And if one wants to be objective and not be involved, then that documentation is incredibly important. But we haven't talked about that. That almost moves into, you know, being a clinician. You know, as a clinician, I can do that. It hasn't helped me very well, except being accurate in terms of memory. I mean, it hasn't helped me prevent this case. But I've done it, and we haven't talked about that as IREST providers, yeah. Providers of IREST.
Yeah, and I'll actually save that for Richard to address. That's okay, because this is a really good point. And if that's okay with you, I'll save it for Richard to address.
Mm-hmm. One other question is, we mentioned earlier about handing out a document, just not a code of conduct, but just a, our relationship with the person that comes in for a dyad. Do you have any samples that you've used that are non-clinical, non-professional, that we might be able to look at?
We'll save that for later, too. Okay. Yeah, those pieces.
Bring the questions up.
Yeah, please.
I can get them for later.
Yeah. Yeah, take just one more.
So, Richard, this can be for later now, but I've got a few. And I've brought these up with you before, but so as a licensed psychotherapist, when somebody comes to see me, one of the questions that I need to ask them is, are they working with anyone else currently? And if so, work that out. And so I'm wondering if you talk about that. And just, I guess the idea, and this could be, I'm thinking with all of this, like, are these just my issues that I need to process more, but that maybe they'll come up for other people, so I'll just say them. And so then also in this role that I'm also used to looking at, do I want to be collaborating with anyone else, a couples therapist that my person might be seeing, or a family doctor, or school teachers, or things like that. And then you also wanted me to remind you about couples work. But then also you've referenced, Kelly's referenced it a little bit today too, but possibly that someone might want to refer someone out. But I wonder if you would actually say more about that. You know, what kinds of situations and
okay.
I think that's it. Thanks.
Thank you.